trains.
Yeah. It's just a matter of convincing.
Welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. Today we've got our usual hosts, Miss Alexandra B. Fishin.
Hello.
And Robert.
Hi.
Hi, Robert.
Sorry, I was delayed reaction there, huh?
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I'm supposed to say something.
Well, we need you to say a lot today.
Just acknowledge you're here, Robert.
On the subject of...
Kingfish.
Kingfish.
Also known as king...
mackerel.
There you go.
Nice.
Very nice. Very nice save.
I learned stuff. I listen to you guys.
There you go.
Is she calling us educators?
No, I don't know about that. Okay. I'm not sure what she's
calling. You guys have been instrumental educators in my life, and I appreciate you both.
Yeah.
I'm a better fisherman for sure because of you, and I was going to say that you got me my biggest fish, but you haven't. So we still need to work on that.
All right. Well, we'll go to the
challenge.
Beach. I can beat that this weekend if you want.
Okay. Goliath from the beach?
Yeah, easy.
Hammerhead. I've had a 7.5-foot shark.
Now
can you get me an 8-foot hammerhead?
You're asking a little too much right now. We got to start.
Wrong time of year. Yeah. Let's go back to
I'll just ask Chandler. He'll get it for me.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll see.
I'll probably be there with you guys. So
we'll see how that works out.
Okay. So kingfish it is.
Yes.
And speaking of kingfish, I didn't do a fact check on the world record.
You should have.
Dang it. Well, let's start with the biggest kingfish you've seen or heard
You're
of.
You're supposed to fact check it right now. What are you doing?
I left my phone in my car.
Oh, jeez. What are we going
to
do with you guys?
No, I have to work.
I'm going to delegate the work to Alex right now.
You know, Southwest Florida, kingfish, king mackerel are definitely pretty much seasonal because they are a migratory species.
Uh-huh.
In the summertime, they tend to head to the northern part of the Gulf. And in the wintertime, they head down to the southern part of the Gulf, like into the Keys and Cuba and places like that.
So being that we're like basically in the center of the state here in Southwest Florida, when they're moving up, which is going to be what, typically in the springtime?
Yeah, typically it's usually late April all the way through the month of May.
Exactly, yeah.
Usually the prime temperature is like 68 to 72 degree water temperature,
mm-hmm.
rising or falling.
Mm-hmm.
But the last several years, we've really seen where these fish are actually showing up and either showing up a little earlier in the springtime mm-hmm. and staying a little bit later.
Mm.
You know, in the same way within the fall. So we've had fish here, you know, showing up when it's, you know, 64, 65 degrees. In decent numbers, but actually not showing up in really good numbers until it's like 74, 76 degrees when tarpon are just starting to show up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and then the same thing in the fall. You know, this year we had kingfish that showed up in really good numbers in, I want to say it was like end of September, first couple weeks of October when the Gulf temperature was still running 80, 81.
Wow.
You know, it was pretty impressive, so... But under normal situation, you're going to say like that 70-degree mark is kind of the ideal number.
It's right when they start coming into this area, when they're moving up the coast of Florida.
And you watch the temperatures. You know, if it's the springtime, you're going to be watching the temperatures from the Keys warming up because those fish will be working their way north. And then obviously in the fall, you're going to be watching the temperatures in the panhandle as they're heading south.
That's interesting. Have you, like... What's the earliest you've seen them or heard of reports of them being caught here in this area?
This year.
Really?
Yeah, this year was like October, that first week of October.
Really? How about the spring?
First week of April, second week of April.
Gotcha. Okay.
That I haven't seen a whole lot of changes with that.
Mm.
But it's the weird part of them staying longer.
Mm.
You know, because usually they're gone by the time tarpon are here in good numbers. You know, by the second week of May, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Last few years, they've been here all the way through to the end of May, even into the early June.
Wow.
But, you know, they're a schooling fish because they are mackerel. They're here year-round offshore. You'll find them, you know, 30 miles out and farther. They're out there pretty much all year long because that water temperature stays pretty consistent, and so does the food source.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you got these guys who travel the kingfish circuit. And whether the tournament, let's say the tournament's in Tampa Bay, and it's the springtime, so they know those fish are all going to be south.
Mm-hmm. They haven't, like, quite worked their way up to Tampa just yet.
Correct. Those guys will actually run from Tampa all the way to here, or even below Fort Myers to fish for those fish. You know, the real serious kingfish guys.
There's a lot of money, like, on those tournaments.
Oh, 100, 200 grand in some instances. By the time you add the side bets and all that good stuff into it, it gets...
So it's worth making those big runs for that type of
thing. Well, it better be, because, I mean, those guys are all running, you know, $300,000 boats. You know, they're running a 35-foot contender with triple 300s or 400s on it. Man. You know, those boats get up and go quickly.
Yeah. So they'll be in the fishing grounds within an hour from Tampa, basically.
Right. But the funny part is, you know, it's like you're fishing for a big kingfish would be over 40 pounds.
Okay.
A decent kingfish, a quality kingfish would be 30 pounds. Mm. You know, so once you get over the 30-pound mark, now you're starting to get into quality. You hit a 50-pound mark, you've really done something. Mm-hmm. And to target those big fish, you'll see those kingfish guys, you know, you would think most people would want to run out to, like, one of the near shore reefs and slow troll around for them or drift, because you can catch them using trolled hard baits or skirted baits like they do for billfish and stuff like that. Or a lot of guys prefer to use ballyhoo. Mm-hmm. There's a fish called a ribbon fish, which is kind of like, it's kind of eel-like, but not really.
It's like an eel that is made out of tinfoil.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. It's yeah. So...
And it's about so as thick, too.
Yeah, I know.
The, you know, there's quite a few of the fish species that they use for bait, and they'll either slow troll form or drift. But the real serious kingfish guys that are looking for that, I mean, you're...
The one, huge one.
If you're fishing for the one...
They're not going for numbers, you're going for that big one.
Always. And, you know, we've talked about it over and over again with any one of these fish. Whenever you're looking for the biggest of that species, you're fishing for one bite. You're not fishing for numbers. You're fishing for that one bite. And those guys that are doing that almost always are going to catch their winning kingfish in 30 feet of water or less. So essentially within 3 miles of the Gulf shoreline from, say, Tampa South. You know, and...
That's really shallow, like, for a kingfish. Or, yeah.
Well, and some of them are 6 feet, 10 feet of water.
Yeah, within a mile of shore, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they'll try to congregate near the passes, but a lot of those guys will slow troll parallel in the beach. And the cool part about that is that almost every fish you do hook is going to be 30-plus pounds. I mean, every one of them. And the crazy part is they are a schooling fish, except for when they get to that size. When they get over 30 pounds, and those fish that are closer to the beaches tend to be the lone females. So it's usually one, maybe two fish. And that's it. They're just swimming along, staying up in that shallower water. They're a dominant predator at that point. The littler guys stay out in their groups and they're safer numbers, but those big females definitely run closer to shore.
The current IGFA all tackle world record is a 93-pound king mackerel caught offshore of San Juan, Puerto Rico in 99. But this year in January, I believe it was, there was a 97.8-pound king mackerel, kingfish, caught on a cruise, just out of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
That's very south, so on the January months, it makes sense during the winter.
Yeah, and they get a lot of, and those fish move back and forth a lot on the East Coast, too, the same way. They'll migrate back and forth, but you have the Gulf Stream there, so those fish will just stay in that Gulf Stream. They don't need to necessarily migrate way far north or way far south as drastic as they do here on this side, because our Gulf Stream loop current, as they call it, on average on our coast is about 80 to 100 miles offshore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Versus on the other coast, it comes in sometimes within a quarter mile of the beach. You know, it depends on how the wind direction is pushing it and obviously the currents and all that stuff. But, you know, I've been to the Keys where it's on top of the reef. You know, it's only 2 miles off A1A or whatever they call that.
Jeez. So it must bring in fish that people don't think you can catch within 2 miles of shore. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, a lot of your pelagics.
And they were fishing the edge of the Gulf Stream.
Yeah.
And they were using a live bonito as bait on 30-pound test tackle.
Yeah, and see, that's the other funny part, is a lot of people think you need this really giant, heavy tackle for king mackerel, and almost all the professional king mackerel fishermen, they usually stick with mono, and they're running anywhere from 20 to about 30-pound. You know, I've heard of a couple of guys that use 40, but most of them stick with 30, 25 and 30-pound test. And it's just about line capacity.
I was just going to say that the reason's got to be because where you're fishing for these kingfish, it's more of an open water. They're not going to try to get you in structure.
Right.
They're just going to make big runs, and you just need line capacity. And I know that a lot of the rigs that they use, especially for live baits, have multiple hooks.
Yeah, they've got small treble hooks on them.
Right, small.
Signal pieces of wire.
Yes. So when those kingfish sometimes come and slash the bait, they'll sometimes get foul hooked, or they you'll get hooked outside of the mouth, and you want to like have that nice stretch with the mono, so that way you keep the hooks in that fish instead of having like straight braid, which could put too much. It wouldn't be as forgiving, let's say that.
Right. Well, no, and you're right though, because it will pull a hook.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely, you got the more pressure you put on it, whether you're using mono or braid, you stand a better chance of popping a hook out. You know, and the best example I can give you is, I was just talking to a gentleman in the shop there. I was talking about going for bluefin tuna, and I was talking to him about, watch those guys on Wicked Tuna, and they're sitting there pulling on that line while reeling and loading their poles up, and they pull hooks all the time, and that's because they're just putting way too much pressure on those fish.
And they're just basically creating a little bit of a hole in the fish's mouth, so mm-hmm. when there's any chance, the harder you pull, the more the flesh, I guess what you could say, tears in their mouth.
Absolutely. And any slack, it has a better chance of getting out that widened hole you've made.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and these guys will fight those king mackerel with pretty light drag, a fairly limber rod, because they want a rod with a lot of tip action, whether they're drifting with natural baits, whether it's live baits or dead baits mm-hmm. or trolling. They like to have that really soft tip on that rod so they can see that their baits are swimming or tracking as properly as possible in case they pick up a blade of grass or seaweed or in some cases garbage. You know, they need to know that is on the end of their rod so they can get all their baits clear and wait for that fish to come along. And like you said, using that single piece of wire, they usually nose hook the bait fish with one single hook or sometimes a treble hook depending on the guy, and then a secondary stinger hook that comes off anywhere from 6 inches to a foot long, or even longer, depending on their baits. And that'll usually be a treble hook that's buried more towards past the dorsal section of that bait. Because they're just like any other toothy critter. They're a slash and cut kind of fish, so they prefer to bite the rear end of any bait first and cut the motor off and then swing back around and then devour the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the barracuda we talked about last week.
Are they related at all?
Not at all. You would think they were because they, everything about them is so similar, but they're not related.
So do you need to use a steel leader then with the king mackerel?
You really should, you know, because a good-sized king mackerel will come up and swallow an entire bait. You know, your smaller kings and stuff like that under, say, 20 pounds, you can get away with 80-pound mono for the most part. But when you're dealing with a bigger baits and trying for that one big fish, like me personally, every big king mackerel in our area from say Sarasota down to Fort Myers that I have seen caught or photographs of and stuff like that have been caught on two distinct species of baits. One is the mullet.
Really?
And mullet. Then the other one is ladyfish.
I was just going to say, I knew that's a big one.
Those two right there have produced some of the biggest kingfish that I have ever personally seen.
Like what, over 60 pounds?
50, 55.
Wow. Mullet and ladyfish.
One was supposedly 59 pounds, but I don't know. It was tough. I mean, I put the fish way over in the high 40s, if not 50 pounds, but I didn't have enough experience to say that it was 1 pound shy of 60 pounds.
And that's interesting because those are the two bait fish that you would find near shore.
Right.
So that's as natural as it gets when a kingfish, a big loner kingfish is swimming near shore. It's like, oh, here's a natural bait inshore. I'm going to go ahead and smash it instead of, I don't know, what else? Like a bonita or maybe a cigar minnow, which is usually found offshore. I'm not saying they wouldn't work, but.
Right. Yeah. And they still probably would, but most of the time your bonita, your cigar minnows, your blue runners, all those are usually associated with near shore and offshore reefs.
Exactly.
And big schools of bait fish, which is where you'll find your numbers. If you want numbers of king mackerel, you're going to go out to fish the perimeters of the reef. And you try to stay on the perimeter of the reef. You try not to go into the reef because that's where all your barracudas are going to be.
Yeah.
And then you also look for balls of bait out there. You know, if you see any bait fish dimpling the surface or just flat out blitzing on the surface, you'll actually see kingfish skyrocketing. And that's where they're coming up through that school of bait so fast. They will launch themselves anywhere from 6 to 15 feet in the air.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's all just a slash and cut style fish or feeding frenzy. So it's pretty crazy.
So let's take a mullet, for instance. And what would you say is like a very common size, like around 12 inches for these big kingfish? Like
yeah.
Foot long mullet?
Yeah. 12 to 14 inches is probably what I would use.
Yeah. And if we're going to rig that with a single strand piece of wire, you would put one, I'm sure, J hook through the nose?
Yeah, that would be my preference to do it.
Okay, and then put like another stinger hook, which is a secondary hook, possibly a treble.
Yeah.
And hook it near like one of the back, they have like two dorsal fins, so maybe towards the back of that second dorsal fin, so when that kingfish comes and slashes, you have a good chance of sticking them?
Yeah, I'd probably go between the second and the first primary dorsal fin.
Okay.
Somewhere in that section. I'm not going to go that far back because what you want to do is you want to have that wire cut to where you've got, let's say, let's just take the foot-long mullet.
Mm-hmm.
Be running like a 2-aught or a 3-aught J hook right through the nose or through the eyes. Or you do what do they call that, a bridle rig.
Yes.
Where they actually run a piece of loop of dental floss, essentially, through the both eyeballs.
Well, right in
just
front of it.
Right.
It's not, you're not,
technically where the tear
through
duct
the tear
would
duct?
Be.
The tear
where,
duct, yeah, not through the eyes. It's
yeah.
A little misleading, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. And you've got a loop on both sides, you know, because it's out, you know. And what you do is you take your hook and you grab through both loops and start twisting it. And then you re-hook itself and it's tightened down to the point where that hook is coming right off the front of the nose in between the two eyeballs with the barb of the hook facing upwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. And then your shank and your line is also pointing basically straight in front of the fish's your bait's nose. So as you're pulling it, it's just tracking them through the water just perfectly. And you haven't hit any vital organs. The fish doesn't drown because you hooked him through his mouth, whether it was his lower jaw or upper jaw. He's still able to breathe as you're dragging him along, slow trolling him or drifting. But one of the big things is getting that fish to still swim as naturally as possible, but yet not have too much loose wire on the outside so it doesn't twist up or tangle up on his side. So what a lot of guys will do is have their wire ready to go for their nose and figure out the size of the bait, then they'll just clip their wire or a little longer piece of wire so that way they can run it off
the eyelet of the first hook, because you don't want to put wire on wire or like two single strands because it cuts.
Right.
So that's why you want to put basically the first J hook that's going through either the nostril is being bridled through the nostril. You want to have two haywire twists going through that one eye of that hook. You don't want to connect one of the haywire twists that's going back to the tail to the first haywire twist that's going directly to the first hook, because then it will kink and break on you.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And then you run that parallel down the body and do a treble hook. And it's funny because you don't use a really giant treble hook even though it's a big bait.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the biggest treble hook you're going to use is like a one-aught. Most guys are sticking with like a number two or a number one.
Wow.
You know, it's just small enough, but enough where it'll stick that fish.
And that's to bring it back into perspective. If you're only using 20-pound mono, that makes sense because you can't get by with like if you use a big treble hook, you're not going to have enough pressure with 20-pound mono to drive it home anyways.
Right.
So you're using hooks that are going to be equipped to the tackle. That way you can't you can get a good hook set.
Well, and plus I got such a mouthful of teeth that sometimes that hook just gets stuck between the teeth, but doesn't actually, it's too wide to bury in there without basically forcing its way around a tooth. So having that little bit smaller shanked hook, it can get between the teeth and bury right into there.
Yeah, too. So it's like a finesse game once you hook these big kingfish. It's just like finesse them, let them run, and don't pull too hard, but keep the tension on the line and chase them down with the boat. And stick them.
And it's tricky too because kingfish and or king mackerel are a favorite food of barracudas and sharks. You really have to be careful when fighting those fish depending on where you're at. So if you're anywhere near a reef, if that fish starts to head towards a reef, there's about a 50% chance that it's going to get cut in half by a barracuda.
And even then, like those big 40-pounders could get cut by it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then more often than not what happens a lot is it gets eaten by a shark. You know, because at those times of the year, the sharks are migrating too.
So, man, that's what... There goes your $100,000 fish if you're in a tournament.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, so it becomes a little tricky, and losing that fish to a shark is kind of a drag, but a lot of people don't realize all of your migratory fish are going somewhere because it's food, water temperature, whether it's spawning conditions or not. So your king mackerel are usually following some other type of bait fish, which are following a Spanish mackerel, and then... Sharks are following the king mackerel behind them. You know, it's that little fish, big fish, bigger fish, giant fish kind of thing, all following each other, and that's what it boils down to.
Unless you're top of the food chain, you're still susceptible to being...
You're still a guppy.
You're still a guppy, even though you could be a 50-pound kingfish. So.
Yep.
So.
You know, that's the cool part about king mackerel, and it's just a matter of going and putting the time in and fishing for that one big fish.
Well, I hope you guys found this helpful and insightful. And if you want to catch yourself a big kingfish, spring and fall here in Southwest Florida, near shore, within 5 miles, big ladyfish or mullet. And that should do the trick. And until our next episode, this is Captain Barry. You can find me on tarponworld.com or YouTube, Tarpon World. Go ahead, Alex.
And I'm Alex B. Fishing.
And last but not
least, Robert.
Roberto.
Our shy little Robert.
He's a manager at Fishing Cranks, and you can see him here when you come visit the store. Until next week, we'll see you then.